This is the B1, B2 test. I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I'll introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. You'll have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. Look at part one. Listen to three people, Dean, Fiona, and Andrew, talk about their favourite places. For questions 1 to 8, write D, F, or A. You have 30 seconds to read the instructions. Now you will hear part one. Dean.
My favorite place is kind of a funny one. Obviously, you know, there are places that have been important in our lives, in all our lives, like the house where we grew up in when we were children, or our first school, or other places like that. And those are all very special places. But if I had to pick one place, it'd be just a kind of a strange thing. It's on the highway between in Texas, between my hometown and Austin, which is the state capital. And when you're driving, there are, you know, these nice little rolling hills, and you go through some wooded areas, and then you come to this part of the highway which is really, really exposed. And especially in the summer, it's really, really bright, even with sunglasses. It's really, really hot. But then suddenly you come around a bend or over a hill, I don't remember exactly, and you enter the sheltering grove of trees that are growing over the highway from both sides of the road. So they form this little arch, a canopy of leaves above you. And just for, I don't know, a mile, 2 miles, just for a brief moment as you're driving through, it's shady. There, you know, there's still sunlight filtering through the leaves. But it's shady, it's cool, and it's just like something out of a film, something out of a children's book or something, a brief rest from the heat and the light, which is very comforting.
Fiona.
My favorite place in the world is probably a beautiful island in Greece where I grew up. I lived there from the age of 10 till I was 19. And it really is a very unspoilt island with an underground lake. So it's very fertile. They grow cotton and corn, sweet corn, and many other types of crops. Basically, it's a very green island with mountains and lovely beaches, and it's really a very special place to me. I think that the people there live a very simple life, and it's very different to 21st century life in Barcelona, for example. The food is fantastic. The tomatoes really taste like tomatoes, and everything is so fresh and simply cooked, but because the ingredients are such good quality, everything tastes fantastic. The people are very kind, and I just love the culture. Obviously, it's sunny, and it's just a very special place to me.
Andrew.
My favorite place, the place where I most enjoy going, is the mountains. It's a nice place to escape the pollution of the city, the hustle and bustle of the city, and get away, get into nature, and just enjoy the silence. I like taking walks up in the mountains. I also like visiting little tiny villages and trying the different types of cuisine that they prepare in these villages.
Now you will hear part one again. Dean.
My favorite place is kind of a funny one. Obviously, you know, there are places that have been important in our lives, in all our lives, like the house where we grew up in when we were children, or our first school, or other places like that. And those are all very special places. But if I had to pick one place, it'd be just kind of a strange thing. It's on the highway between in Texas, between my hometown and Austin, which is the state capital. And when you're driving, there are, you know, these nice little rolling hills, and you go through some wooded areas. And then you come to this part of the highway, which is really, really exposed. And especially in the summer, it's really, really bright, even with sunglasses. It's really, really hot. But then suddenly you come around a bend or over a hill, I don't remember exactly, and you enter the sheltering grove of trees that are growing over the highway from both sides of the road. So they form this little arch, a canopy of leaves above you. And just for, I don't know, a mile, 2 miles, just for a brief moment as you're driving through, it's shady. There, you know, there's still sunlight filtering through the leaves, but it's shady, it's cool, and it's just like something out of a film, something out of a children's book or something, a brief rest from the heat and the light, which is very comforting.
Fiona.
My favorite place in the world is probably a beautiful island in Greece where I grew up. I lived there from the age of 10 till I was 19. And it really is a very unspoilt island with an underground lake. So it's very fertile. They grow cotton and corn, sweet corn, and many other types of crops. Basically, it's a very green island with mountains and lovely beaches, and it's really a very special place to me. I think that the people there live a very simple life, and it's very different to 21st century life in Barcelona, for example. The food is fantastic. The tomatoes really taste like tomatoes, and everything is so fresh and simply cooked, but because the ingredients are such good quality, everything tastes fantastic. The people are very kind, and I just love the culture. Obviously, it's sunny, and it's just a very special place to me.
Andrew.
My favorite place, the place where I most enjoy going, is the mountains. It's a nice place to escape the pollution of the city, the hustle and bustle of the city, and get away, get into nature, and just enjoy the silence. I like taking walks up in the mountains. I also like visiting little tiny villages and trying the different types of cuisine that they prepare in these villages.
That is the end of part one. Look at part two. Listen to Wendy and Joan talking about climate change and complete the spaces 1 to 8 with a maximum of 3 words from the recording. You have 30 seconds to read the instructions. Now you will hear part two.
So, Wendy, tell me, what do you think about this whole thing about climate change?
Well, Joan, I see a lot of evidence of climate change all around me. I mean, for me, it's not really a theoretical thing that's happening. It's something that I can see. And I'm really worried about it, to be honest. I feel scared for the future.
What? You say you see it around you?
Well, for example, in my hometown where I'm from, in the northern part of British Columbia, in Canada, there's obviously a lot of forest, but inside the trees that grow there, there's a little bug called a pine beetle, and it gets underneath the skin of the trees. It lives under the bark of the trees, and it essentially kills the trees. And this is really dangerous because when trees die, they become dry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good for forest fires. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was a child, winters were very cold, about minus 40. And now they don't get that cold anymore. And these cold temperatures are what killed this bug. But now that this bug isn't being killed off because of the freezing cold weather, all these trees are dying. So that means that there's a lot of really dry, dead trees, and I can see in my hometown every year the forest fires are worse and bigger and more of them, and the smoke is coming into the city. It's terrible.
Yeah.
What about you? Have you seen anything?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's really a big problem. I think it's probably the biggest problem that's facing us as a civilization right now. I mean, just look at the temperatures.
Yeah.
The summer temperatures this year in Paris were extremely high.
I think up to
about 40 degrees centigrade.
I heard they were the highest in history.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, I think that in order to resolve these problems, I mean, people do a lot of things individually, you know, like, I don't know, trying to buy fruit and produce that are produced locally. I don't know, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really important that we buy locally produced fruit, because when you have to send it or transport it long distances, that's obviously a source of pollution.
Yeah, or like people have started using public transportation, but I really think if we really want some long-term solutions, I think they're going to have to be not just only individual solutions. I think this is a global problem.
And we're going to have to cooperate. Yeah.
Yep.
Now you will hear part two again.
So, Wendy, tell me, what do you think about this whole thing about climate change?
Well, Joan, I see a lot of evidence of climate change all around me. I mean, for me, it's not really a theoretical thing that's happening. It's something that I can see. And I'm really worried about it, to be honest. I feel scared for the future.
What? You say you see it around you?
Well, for example, in my hometown where I'm from, in the northern part of British Columbia, in Canada, there's obviously a lot of forest, but inside the trees that grow there, there's a little bug called a pine beetle, and it gets underneath the skin of the trees. It lives under the bark of the trees, and it essentially kills the trees. And this is really dangerous because when trees die, they become dry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good for forest fires. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was a child, winters were very cold, about minus 40. And now they don't get that cold anymore. And these cold temperatures are what killed this bug. But now that this bug isn't being killed off because of the freezing cold weather, all these trees are dying. So that means that there's a lot of really dry, dead trees, and I can see in my hometown every year the forest fires are worse and bigger and more of them, and the smoke is coming into the city. It's terrible.
Yeah.
What about you? Have you seen anything?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's really a big problem. I think it's probably the biggest problem that's facing us as a civilization right now. I mean, just look at the temperatures.
Yeah.
The summer temperatures this year in Paris were extremely high. I mean, up mm-hmm. to about 40 degrees centigrade.
I heard they were the highest in history.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, I think that in order to resolve these problems, I mean, people do a lot of things individually, you know, like, I don't know, trying to buy fruit and produce that are produced locally. I don't know, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, I think that's really important that we buy locally produced fruit, because when you have to send it or transport it long distances, that's obviously a source of pollution.
Yeah, or like people have started using public transportation, but I really think if we really want some long-term solutions, I think they're going to have to be not just only individual solutions. I think this is a global problem.
And we're going to have to cooperate. Yeah.
Yep.
That is the end of part two. Now look at part three. Listen to Fiona talking about her home. Complete the sentences 1 to 9 with a maximum of 3 words from the recording. You have 30 seconds to read the instructions. Now you will hear part three.
When I was very young, my parents bought an old ruined house in the north of Scotland in a tiny village that had no shops and very few inhabitants. It was falling down and they had to rebuild the walls and the roof. And it took them probably 2 years to complete the work. They did get a grant from the Scottish government and they worked through the winter, even though my father had been in hospital for 18 months with broken legs and was on the roof in the Scottish winter while still on crutches. They did get the roof done and they did make the place waterproof. The house ended up being beautiful. It was white with black frames around the windows, and we had a lovely cork floor in the kitchen and a lovely Laura Ashley carpet in the living room. We had a green leather Chesterfield, and we had, I think, 3 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms. And also behind the house there was a ceramics workshop where my father did his work, and a gallery to display his work, and a shop. So we had people coming to see the ceramics and come to buy the ceramics from my father. Also, they taught ceramic courses at home, and we had residential courses, people staying in the house with us. And we had students from Japan, Saudi Arabia, all over the world, really. Even we had one student from South Africa, and that was very exotic in the north of Scotland. And the house really was in a beautiful setting in rural Scotland, with a farm next door, a stream in the garden, and it was the most beautiful house. And we still live there now. It's not as beautiful because it's older, but it's still a very nice place to live, and we're very lucky.
Now Now you will hear part three again.
When I was very young, my parents bought an old ruined house in the north of Scotland, in a tiny village that had no shops and very few inhabitants. It was falling down and they had to rebuild the walls and the roof, and it took them probably 2 years to complete the work. They did get a grant from the Scottish government and they worked through the winter, even though my father had been in hospital for 18 months with broken legs and was on the roof in the Scottish winter while still on crutches. They did get the roof done and they did make the place waterproof. The house ended up being beautiful. It was white with black frames around the windows, and we had a lovely cork floor in the kitchen and a lovely Laura Ashley carpet in the living room. We had a green leather Chesterfield, and we had, I think, three bedrooms and two bathrooms. And also behind the house there was a ceramics workshop where my father did his work, and a gallery to display his work, and a shop. So we had people coming to see the ceramics and come to buy the ceramics from my father. Also, they taught ceramic courses at home, and we had residential courses, people staying in the house with us. And we had students from Japan, Saudi Arabia, all over the world really. Even we had one student from South Africa, and that was very exotic in the north of Scotland. And the house really was in a beautiful setting in rural Scotland, with a farm next door, a stream in the garden, and it was the most beautiful house. And we still live there now. It's not as beautiful because it's older, but it's still a very nice place to live, and we're very lucky.
That is the end of part three. Now look at part four. Listen to Noelia talking about living in Maastricht. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B, C, or D, which you think is correct. You have 30 seconds to read the instructions. Now you will hear part four.
Hi Noelia, how are things?
Hi Suzanne, how are you?
All right. So I wanted to ask you, have you ever lived abroad, or have you ever lived in a place that you would like to tell me about?
Well, in fact I did. Around three years ago, I lived in Maastricht, which is a small university city in the southeast part of the Netherlands. And I have very good memories of this city.
How long did you live there?
I spent a year and a half.
Oh, okay. What did you like about this? I've never been there, so I know nothing about it, the Netherlands.
Well, the city is very well located because it's in the, like, near Belgium and Germany. So if you like to travel, it's a perfect location. Mm-hmm. And the city itself is really lovely and surprising because it has an old look. Yeah, all the buildings look very old.
What century were more or less? Or?
I would say like 14th, 15th century. They have red brick buildings and brick roads. But what is surprising is that when you go inside, most of these buildings have been renovated. Mm-hmm. And they have the latest trends in furniture and technology.
Okay.
So it's very refreshing, very, very surprising.
So it's like a big contrast between the outside and the inside, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And what about, I've heard that they ride a lot of bicycles there, did you?
Oh, they do, they do. That's another thing that I like about Maastricht is its citizens, the people there. Uh-huh. They are very healthy in many ways. And especially regarding bikes, they cycle, they go with their bikes everywhere, no matter if it is raining or snowing.
That's incredible. I can't imagine riding a bike in the snow.
Yeah, and winters are really long.
So they're really dedicated, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It can be snowing from October until April. Wow. And they don't stop riding their bikes. Everything is really well prepared for that.
Okay. And so did you live in one of these old buildings or what kind of place did you live in?
My house was more like a typical Dutch house. So made of wood, really well prepared for the winter. And it had like four different floors and I lived in the penthouse.
Okay. And so what is, I don't know what a Dutch house is like. So you say they're wooden.
Uh-huh.
And what else? What are some other characteristics of Dutch houses?
Well, the best thing that the first thing that you notice is that they have super big windows.
Really?
And no blinds or no curtains.
Really?
Yeah.
Aren't they worried about peeping toms or people trying to look at them in through the windows?
Well, Dutch people, they love sunlight, so they don't mind other people looking at them. They have nothing to hide. They are so open. So when you walk down the streets, you can see inside the houses. You can see people in their living room watching TV or in their kitchens cooking.
Wow, and they're not afraid that thieves will want to rob them or anything. Mm-mm, I guess not.
No, everything is really safe there.
Okay. So they're really, well, they're resistant because they ride bikes in the winter. They're really open about what are they like as people? Like,
well, one of the things that strikes me the most is that they would smile at you even though they don't know you the first time they see you.
That's nice.
Yeah. That says a lot about them.
Okay. And are they really punctual? Are they
Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah, okay. They are lovely people and they love eating out in the sun. Whenever it is a sunny day, they all go out and have lunch outside in the main plaza. Uh-huh. And they love enjoying. I think enjoying life is one of their mottos, their philosophies.
Lifestyle. That's surprising.
Yeah.
I always thought that the northern countries were a little bit more focused on work, mm-hmm. but not them, no?
No, not that people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. I have to go. I have to get going because I have to catch a bus, but I'll see you later.
Yeah, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Now you will hear part four again.
Hi, Noelia. How are things?
Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
All right. So I wanted to ask you, have you ever lived abroad or have you ever lived in a place that you would like to tell me about?
Well, in fact, I did. Around three years ago, I lived in Maastricht, which is a small university city in the southeast part of the Netherlands. Uh-huh. And I have very good memories of this city.
How long did you live there?
I spent a year and a half.
Oh, okay. What did you like about this? I've never been there, so I know nothing about it, the Netherlands.
Well, the city is very well located because it's in the, like, near Belgium and Germany. So if you like to travel, it's a perfect location. Mm-hmm. And the city itself is really lovely and surprising because it has an old look. Yeah, all the buildings look very old.
What century were more or less?
I would say like 14th, 15th century. They have red brick buildings and brick roads. But what is surprising is that when you go inside, most of these buildings have been renovated, mm-hmm. and they have the latest trends in furniture and technology.
Okay.
So it's very refreshing, very, very surprising.
So it's like a big contrast between the outside and the inside, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And what about, I've heard that they ride a lot of bicycles there, did you?
Oh, they do, they do. That's another thing that I like about Maastricht is its citizens, the mm-hmm. people there. Mm-hmm. They are very healthy in many ways. And especially regarding bikes, they cycle, they go with their bikes everywhere, no matter if it is raining or snowing.
That's incredible. I can't imagine riding a bike in the snow.
Yeah, and winters are really long.
So they're really dedicated, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It can be snowing from October until April. Wow. And they don't stop riding their bikes. Everything is really well prepared for that.
Okay. And so did you live in one of these old buildings or what kind of place did you live in?
My house was more like a typical Dutch house. So made of wood, really well prepared for the winter. And it had like 4 different floors and I lived in the penthouse.
Okay. And so what is, I don't know what a Dutch house is like. So you say they're wooden.
Uh-huh.
And what else? What are some of the characteristics of Dutch houses?
Well, the best thing that the first thing that you notice is that they have super big windows.
Really?
And no blinds or no curtains.
Really?
Yeah.
Aren't they worried about peeping toms or people trying to look at them in through the windows?
Well, Dutch people, they love sunlight, so they don't mind other people looking at them. They have nothing to hide. They are so open. So uh-huh. When you walk down the streets, you can see inside the houses. You can see people in their living room watching TV or in their kitchens cooking.
Wow, and they're not afraid that thieves will want to rob them or anything. Mm-mm, I guess not.
No, everything is really safe there.
Okay. So they're really, well, they're resistant because they ride bikes in the winter. They're really open about
uh-huh.
What are they like as people?
Well, one of the things that strikes me the most is that they would smile at you even though they don't know you the first time they see you.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. That says a lot about them.
Okay. And are they really punctual? Are they
Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah, okay. They are lovely people. And they love eating out in the sun. Whenever it is a sunny day, they all go out and have lunch outside in the main plaza.
Uh-huh.
And they love enjoying. I think enjoying life is one of the their mottos, their philosophies.
Lifestyle. That's surprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always thought that the northern countries were a little bit more focused on work, mm-hmm. but not them, no?
No, not that people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. I have to go. I have to get going because I have to catch a bus, but I'll see you later.
Yeah, see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
That is the end of part 4. Now look at part 5. Listen to Suzanne talking about food and complete the spaces 1 to 9 with a maximum of 3 words from the recording. You have 30 seconds to read the instructions. Now you will hear part 5.
So I guess I am a picky eater, or that's what some people have called me. My friends tell me this sometimes, and my parents, of course. But I don't think I'm a picky eater. You may ask, what is that? A picky eater is somebody who supposedly has difficulty eating most foods, and they don't like most things, and they're usually kind of selective about what they eat. My mom tells me that when I was a child, I was very picky in that I wouldn't eat just anything. When I ate vegetables, actually I did like vegetables, which is kind of unusual for some children. I think a lot of children don't really like that sort of thing. But I liked them a lot, and I especially liked pulses. I liked beans, like pinto beans that were red, and lima beans, and any other type of bean. And I liked them because they were small and round, and usually I liked the different colors. And my mom tells me that I used to play with them before I would eat them. And I think that must have been really frustrating as a parent, because you just really want your kid to eat instead of play with their food. But I guess in the end, all that matters is if they eat them. So I don't know, there are a lot of different things that are important to me with food. For example, the presentation of it is really important. I don't like when there's a lot of food on a plate. That really turns me off. I think it looks really unappetizing. And I lose all desire to eat if I see a plate piled high with lots and lots of food, which is actually the case in my country. When you go to a restaurant, there tends to be really big portions, and this could explain why some people over there are overweight. Other things that bother me about food is, of course, for a lot of people, smell. Obviously, a lot of people don't like the way, or if they don't like the way something smells, we're not going to eat it. And anything that smells fried, or looks right, because also the way it looks, I won't eat anything like that. I like vegetables a lot. I primarily eat vegetables, so it's important for me that they look fresh, and I like to see their colors. I like green, and I like vibrant colors in vegetables. I don't like to see overcooked and kind of dead-looking dishes. What else can I say? I mean, for me, this is not being a picky eater. It just makes sense to me that you would eat fresh food and you wouldn't eat a lot. I'd say my favorite foods are somewhere between Mexican cuisine and Indian. They share some things in common, some common ingredients like cilantro or coriander, some spices. This is the type of food I grew up with. I grew up with Mexican food. And I don't mind spicy food. I really like that. There's not much more to say. Like I said, I don't think I'm very picky, but I've been told that I am. But that's just the way I am, and I think that's the only way to eat, really.
Now you will hear part five again.
So I guess I am a picky eater, or that's what some people have called me. My friends tell me this sometimes, and my parents, of course. But I don't think I'm a picky eater. You may ask, what is that? A picky eater is somebody who supposedly has difficulty eating most foods, and they don't like most things, and they're usually kind of selective about what they eat. My mom tells me that when I was a child, I was very picky in that I wouldn't eat just anything. When I ate vegetables, actually I did like vegetables, which is kind of unusual for some children. I think a lot of children don't really like that sort of thing, but I liked them a lot, and I especially liked pulses. I liked beans, like pinto beans that were red, and lima beans, and any other type of bean. And I liked them because they were small and round, and usually I liked the different colors. And my mom tells me that I used to play with them before I would eat them. And I think that must have been really frustrating as a parent, because you just really want your kid to eat instead of play with their food. But I guess in the end, all that matters is if they eat them. So, I don't know, there are a lot of different things that are important to me with food. For example, the presentation of it is really important. I don't like when there's a lot of food on a plate. That really turns me off. I think it looks really unappetizing. And I lose all desire to eat if I see a plate piled high with lots and lots of food, which is actually the case in my country. When you go to a restaurant, there tends to be really big portions, and this could explain why some people over there are overweight. Other things that bother me about food is, of course, for a lot of people, smell. Obviously, a lot of people don't like the way, or if they don't like the way something smells, we're not going to eat it. And anything that smells fried, or looks fried, because also the way it looks, I won't eat anything like that. I like vegetables a lot. I primarily eat vegetables, so it's important for me that they look fresh, and I like to see their colors. I like green, and I like vibrant colors in vegetables. I don't like to see overcooked and kind of dead-looking dishes. What else can I say? I mean, for me, this is not being a picky eater. It just makes sense to me that you would eat fresh food, and you wouldn't eat a lot. I'd say my favorite foods are somewhere between Mexican cuisine and Indian. They share some things in common, some common ingredients like cilantro or coriander, some spices. This is the type of food I grew up with. I grew up with Mexican food. And I don't mind spicy food. I really like that. There's not much more to say. Like I said, I don't think I'm very picky, but I've been told that I am. But that's just the way I am, and I think that's the only way to eat, really.
That is the end of part 5. That is the end of the listening exam. You now have 5 minutes to transfer your answers to the answer sheet. Please stop writing.